Each week during the Easter season, our second reading has been drawn from the book of Revelation, also called sometimes the Apocalypse of Saint John. It's the very last book in the entire Bible, and as any of you who have tried to work through it know, it is a challenging read. This is partly because it's highly symbolic. I sometimes think of it as one of those kind of psychedelic paintings by Hieronymus Bosch. You know, there's like flames over here and three-headed things over there. You're never quite sure what's going on, but the message gets through. And to use a very technical, theological, biblical term, some of the images in the book of Revelation are just really, really weird. No wonder, then, that Revelation has long frustrated Christians who wish to extract from its pages some kind of literal roadmap for the course of human events, especially about the end of time. Today's excerpt, it was the second reading, gives us the climax of the entire book, where John, the author, beholds a new heaven and a new earth, where he gazes upon the new Jerusalem, as he calls it. It's a vision, as we would say today, of paradise or eternal life. John says that he heard a loud voice from the throne of God itself saying, "Behold, God's dwelling place is with the human race." God's dwelling is with the human race. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall be no more death or mourning, wailing or pain, for the old order has passed away. And God says, "Behold, I make all things new." It's a very consoling message. It was consoling in the first century, and it's consoling in the 21st as well. Although we may find ourselves tempted to say, "Come on, God, get along with this." We are asked to draw comfort from that reading. Indeed, from the entirety of the Easter season, we get 40 days of Lent and we get 50 of Easter, in order to remind ourselves that something definitive has shifted in this world when Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Something new broke in. And that is the good news. And we need reminding because bad news is there as often as we look. As often as we open our phone, as often as we turn on the TV, as often as you open your door, for those of you who still get a paper newspaper and pick it up, there's the bad news. We are bombarded by the reality of suffering, injustice, scandal, pain, and death. And in light of that symphony of sorrow, we need reminding that God is indeed making all things new. That this has already begun, this all things new, even if we are still waiting for its fullness, sometimes waiting impatiently. It began when Jesus stepped out of that tomb on the first Easter Sunday, and it began in each one of us when we were baptized. That's why each Sunday in Easter, I get to inflict on you that wonderful surprise coming up the main aisle by sprinkling you with water. We need reminding that God is still trying to make all things new, that this has started and cannot be stopped, despite any discouraging sign or all the discouraging signs that we see. We wait and we yearn for the full realization of that promise, but all of the initiative is not with God. The vision of a loving God wiping away tears from every eye and putting an end to death and mourning, wailing, and pain, it stirs our hearts, and it should. It also asks us as Christians an uncomfortable question. What am I doing to make that a reality already? Whose tears am I helping to wipe away or not? Whose mourning do I accompany? Whose wailing and pain am I really willing to even hear and see, let alone help carry? This is how all will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. That's what Jesus says in the gospel this Sunday, a passage drawn not from a post-resurrection account, but from the Last Supper in the Gospel of John. One month ago yesterday, many of us were crammed into this church on Holy Thursday night. We heard then those other words from today's gospel. I give you a new commandment. Love one another. As I have loved you, so also you must love one another. And right after we heard that a month ago, we imitated what Jesus did at the Last Supper. He got down on his hands and knees in front of his friends, and he washed their feet, including the ones who were going to betray and deny him, in a gesture of self-emptying love. And when we did that, we said that we want that love, the love of Eucharist and of foot washing, to fill our hearts, the love that lays itself down. Perhaps a month into this Easter season is a good time for us to ask, how am I doing with that, concretely? Every time we approach this table, we re-up on that commitment. We say that no matter our struggles, no matter our weakness, no matter our failures, that it is the love of Jesus that we want filling our hearts. And we are fed as often as we come to this table with the grace we need for the journey of discipleship. In just a few moments, 9 of our youngest parishioners will share communion with us at this table for the very first time. This is an occasion for you, for your families, for all present, of great joy, and it's a delight to be able to share it with you. But more than a happy occasion, what you do here, young men and women, what you do here is a reminder for all of us, a little bit like being sprinkled with water when you're not expecting it. And it's this, that God is doing something new before our eyes. Right before our eyes. And that whether this communion be our first communion or our last communion, we are called as long as we are here to share that work with God. Perfectly? No. Or at least not yet. But faithfully? Yes. Always. Always.